This is the Paper Planes podcast, where we take a deep dive into some of the week's most notable business and marketing stories and interview high-performing business leaders and marketing professionals to find out their lessons for success.
We're putting that capability into the hands of business and marketing users to help them find more insights and actions to take from data. You're going to see more augmentation happening, meaning it creates additional capacity for you to do more of your work, removing a lot of the redundant kind of tasks that you do.
Welcome to episode number 74 of the Paper Planes podcast with me, Simon Dell from Paper Planes. Thank you for tuning in. If this is your first time listening to the show, then we really appreciate you joining us. There are 73 other episodes for you to go and listen to after this, so please go and have a look through those. There are, in the last 73 episodes, some really, really fantastic interviews, some amazing people that have taught me personally some really important things as I've spoken to them over the last year and so. And I think you would get a lot of value going back and listening to some of them. But, excuse me, today we have a gentleman on the show by the name of Scott Rigby, and he works at Adobe. He is the head of digital transformation. He does a lot of talking in public, not just talking in general, but he does a lot of that as well. He calls himself a technologist. He speaks on innovation, strategy, and marketing. So a very, very smart guy from a very, very big organization. And we're going to talk today a lot about digital transformation because it is a buzz phrase that gets bounced about a lot of organizations. You may be using it yourself at the moment. And he's going to talk about what it means, how to actually make it happen, and all the road bumps through the process of transforming an organization from a non-digital one to a digital one. I have some sideline experience from watching an organization that I consulted with a couple of years ago going through a digital transformation. It is amazing how a digital transformation can fall apart when the people that are driving it or people were driving it are no longer in the organization. I saw an organization spend allegedly in the region of $8 million to move their business into a more digitally focused area and then get halfway through the project and abandon it. Those kind of things very much come down to the leadership, and this may be something that your organization is struggling with in terms of getting leaders on board to take a more digital approach to their organization. So if you listen to Scott, he's got some ideas. He's got some tips for you. If you want to find him on LinkedIn, Scott Rigby, he's not hard to find. So look, very, very interesting conversation with this guy today, and I think you'll get a lot of value out of it. The last few housekeeping things, please rate and review us on iTunes. We can't thank you enough for all the people that have gone and done that. It would be fantastic, even if you can just put 5 stars in there. You don't actually have to write anything, but if you can, that's great. If you want to find out more about us, flypaperplanes.co. That's me and Matt. That's our consultancy business, our digital marketing consultancy business. Come and talk to us. If you have a problem, anything small from SEO, Google AdWords, all the way up to major transformation projects, major CRM implementations, those kind of bits and pieces. And of course, please, please, please come and add me on LinkedIn. Simon Dell. I am Simon Dell. Come and find me on Twitter. I am Simon Dell on there. Find us on Facebook, all those other places. We really, really appreciate when people add us on there and let us know that they've listened to the podcast. So yeah, come and chat to us. We'd love to find out more about your organization, your business. Finally, Gilberto, the podcast boss, the guy who puts all this together for us. You can find him on thepodcastboss.com. He does a lot of work out there for his clients. I'm not going to go into it, or you can go and check out his website. But if you are thinking of building a podcast, either for yourself personally or for your organization, Gilberto is definitely a person you should be talking to. That is pretty much it from me. Let us jump straight in to the interview with Scott Rigby. So Scott, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Simon.
Just for everybody's benefit out there, let's find out first of all, what the hell exactly a head of digital transformation does on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, so probably maybe just to change the lens a little bit, I actually have an external looking view in this business. So my role is really to talk to potential customers of Adobe as well as customers of Adobe about what transformation looks like within their business. Predominantly, I engage at the C-level executives kind of suite to help them understand why investing in technology is important, what technology that's potentially going to disrupt their industry is over the horizon, what's happening from a trend perspective, whether that be sort of industry level or regional level, where that transformation might happen. So whether it be sort of the customer side, the employee side, operational efficiency, or testing out new business models. And then there's a whole bunch of other pieces around it. I'm kind of interested in new technologies like blockchain. I help craft some of our thinking around AI and ethics and what that means and kind of our input to government around it. So it's quite a broad role.
Lot to talk about there. Give us an idea about some of the customers or the clients that you would work with, within your role.
Yeah, so I mean, if we take a couple of Australian customers, so we work with a lot of big enterprise customers as well as sort of small, medium-sized businesses. So some of the more recognisable brands that we work with, Westpac as an example, Telstra, Fairfax. If I think more, I have an Asia Pac role. So if you think about outside of this, Singapore Airlines or Malaysia Airlines, work with, say, Singtel in Singapore, as well as, Chinese, Indian type brands, et cetera. We operate from a global perspective, and my role covers Asia Pacific.
I suspect you do a fair bit of traveling then, don't you?
Probably more than I care to.
Okay. So look, I mean, I guess, digital transformation has been one of those phrases that's been used a lot, probably in the last 10 years. And I would imagine that, I'm sure you'll get some resistance, and we'll talk about that later on, but I would imagine the bigger companies are quite aware of what they might need to do. But looking at this from a sort of SME perspective, smaller businesses, family-run businesses, what does digital transformation actually mean to those smaller to medium-sized businesses? And can I get an example of perhaps where you might suggest those types and sizes of business could start to look at ways that they can transform to a digital focused business?
Yeah, so let me start with probably a macro view on transformation, and I kind of alluded to it already. So there's lots of models around transformation should look like, and let's just talk about transformation. Digital, I think, is somewhat ubiquitous, and it's more transformation and business transformation. So there's four pillars that I tend to think about for transformation, and this applies to businesses of every size. So customer experience is probably the area that most businesses are focused on at the moment. The next area is around employee experience. How can you improve the way your employees engage with your business? The third area is around how can you use technology to drive operational efficiency in your business. And then the fourth pillar for transformation is around how you might test out new revenue models or new ways that you might go to market, et cetera, for your business. And if we then take more of a micro view of where, say, small, medium enterprise businesses could start, most businesses are focused around kind of the customer side at the moment. And there's lots of technology across the spectrum that can help them improve the way that they engage with their customers, whether they're a B2C business or whether they're a B2B business. There's lots of free technology that where at some point you get to a point where you then suddenly have, you have to pay for it. Like Adobe, for instance, we have software as a service, so technology that scales, and obviously the price point scales pro rata along with the amount of volume you use. And, the common area, if I think, so let's take customer experiences, a key focal point for most businesses at the moment. There's kind of three areas within that we tend to talk to. So one is data, and we say data is the voice of your customer. So if you can understand the data that your customers are, and when I talk about data, they might be engaging with your website, they might be engaging through a mobile application, they might be coming into your store if you have one, and you're collecting data in real time about what your customers' wants and needs are. And so data is the voice of your customer. And then once you understand what your customers want, you need to then respond back to them. And typically the way you do that is with content. So content helps guide them to, say, the path to purchase or application for a credit card or a path to service. Maybe they're looking for a certain type of service. And so you need data, you need content. And then lastly, you need a delivery engine. How do you actually deliver that to your customer in the right channel, on the right device, at the right time? And so you need to, you know, look at how you might bring those three together. And like I said, there's lots of simple, easy ways to start. There's lots of, cheap or free technology that small, medium-sized businesses can get started with in those three areas that allow you to send an email for delivery or collect data about, you know, website interactions or be able to host the website with content that can start to build and improve your customer experience. The most common way, just to kind of close this out, is to look at what is your key customer segments, what are the ones that are most profitable or drive the most value for your business. Start to map their typical journey with your brand. So where might they find out about you, about your brand, your products, how they might then engage, do their research, consider it, how they might then convert. Do they buy online? Do they come in store or branch or whatever it might be? How do you then engage them post that sale activity to continue to, you know, have a lifetime value with the customer and they come back to continue to engage, and look at where those friction points are and then look at what you can do both, you know, internally, better process, better content, communicate with, and better technology to be able to scale it and identify how you might resolve those friction points. And typically technology now is an area that you start with, but you also need to think about the organizational skills, et cetera, you have in your business to improve it.
Most people will recognize, and you know, most people in this industry will recognize the Adobe brand and the Adobe name. But what sort of software tools would you guys be using in that customer experience space? I mean, what do you find works best for people? And that's a question asking about your suite of tools rather than other
people. Yeah. Sure. So I think maybe just a quick overview of Adobe, because Adobe's got quite a legacy and a heritage that a lot of people recognize us for. So, you know, what we call the Creative Cloud, which is Photoshop, Illustrator, those types of tools. We then have Document Cloud, which is Acrobat, PDF, digital signatures, etc. And then the newer baby, I guess, of our technology, although not so new, was an acquisition 9 years ago. And we slowly built that out. And now that's what we call our Experience Cloud. And that's technology that allows businesses to be able to engage customers across every stage of that customer lifecycle. So whether it be, you know, advertising on, say, the age or news.com.au and building kind of your brand and product awareness all the way through to that customer, then engaging with that ad and coming to your website or your mobile application and how you might deliver that and collect the data around what they're interested in, etc., through to them actually purchasing that product potentially. So the commerce interaction, so payments, shopping carts, etc., through to then engaging them. So now that they're a customer, how do you get them to come back and buy from you again, whether that be through email, text message. We have the ability to be able to deliver content to interactive kiosks or interactive screens in stores or bank branches like we do with Telstra, with Commonwealth Bank, etc. We also have augmented reality and virtual reality capabilities. So we have kind of a very broad range of tools that are integrated that allow you to have a seamless brand and consistent conversation with your customer across that entire life cycle.
Okay. So what about, and again, you know, this is this is a bit of an unfair question to throw back to you, but what about some other tools that you see out there that you think people should be using from a software perspective?
Look, it really depends on where you're at from a maturity perspective.
Okay.
So, and also how big your resourcing pool is and the skills that are in your business. There's lots of, you know, there's, like I said, there's lots of tools that, particularly if we're talking to SMEs, there's lots of tools that can help you get started and you can build up your capability and build up your knowledge and the intellectual capital around these tools and how to execute. And then you're going to get to a point where those tools simply are not going to be integrated enough or scalable enough to kind of meet your business needs. So, you know, if you're thinking about, for instance, analytics, there's lots of free analytics products out there, you know, Google being one of them, that is a great starting point. But at some point, it's going to get to a threshold that doesn't allow your business to kind of go to the next level. And so you need to start to look at paid tools like Adobe. Or if you're looking at, say, content and you're wanting to deliver a website or a mobile application, you might start with something as basic as a Wix site, right? You'd start with something really simple. Start to understand, the nuances between you can't serve the same content to every audience. You need to sort of personalize that, and you're going to reach a threshold in respect of that technology. And at some point, you're going to go to a paid solution for that. You might use different types of email technologies, Cheetah Mail, or whatever it might be. And then you're going to get to a point where you need something that's integrated. And I think the bigger challenge here is it's great to use these tools, get familiar with them. The biggest challenge is they don't come integrated. So therefore, trying to deliver that consistent experience as customers move from, say, one device to the next, or they move from, let's say, for instance, purchasing product. Now you want to email that same segment that just purchased a particular product or purchased in the last month, trying to replicate that segment from your commerce software across your email software can be challenging because the integrations are simply not there. So that's where you need to think about a paid solution that's integrated, where something you can say, look, there's an interesting segment from our analytics. We want to serve them a personalized ad if they come to our website. We want to send them an email or a text message, or we might personalize an ad if they happen to go to, Financial Review or news.com.au, whatever it might be. And you can't do that with multiple different, smaller free or sort of lower end technologies.
You've mentioned data quite a lot already. What and one of the things we find when we deal with clients of all different sizes is that there just seems to be this explosion in volume of data that's available to them.
Yeah.
When you sit down and sit down with a customer first time, you're in your first meeting, you're in a brief meeting, what are the numbers that you really want to look at in terms of this?
Well, I think, you are right. I think in a lot of cases for most businesses, they're dealing with probably more data than they know what to deal with. And that's where particularly, I guess, as we move into the paid segment of technology, like Adobe as an example, we have artificial intelligence and particularly machine learning. We've had that capability for a very long time, and we can help you analyze all of the different, millions of data points that you're likely collecting on a daily basis from your customers and start to identify anomalies within that data to then surface that up for you to be able to take action. And if you look at some of the lower end technologies that don't have that capability, meaning that unless you've got great sort of analytics skill set, even if you did have that, you're still going to be deep diving into that technology to find interesting insights to then translate into actions for your business to be able to improve your conversion rate, the size of your basket, average order value, whatever it might be, or decrease your cost, etc. And so that's where we're putting that capability into the hands of business and marketing users to help them find more insights and actions to take from data rather than just reporting on it. When it comes to what should I measure, well, that's typically, first of all, industry dependent and then business dependent. So there are specific metrics for, say, retail versus, insurance as an example. So retail might look at, average basket size, dollar value, orders, etc., number of products per basket, where someone in insurance might be looking at, how many people went from quote start to quote complete and then application start to application complete. And so they're just using different metrics. And then usually you'd also then tie that to, well, what are the organizational goals, right? We need to align these metrics to organizational goals and be able to report how these channels are contributing to driving those numbers, right? Or goals, whatever it might be.
You must also walk into businesses and find, I think I alluded to earlier on, some resistance either from the senior people within the business or lower level people within the business. How do you if you're talking to someone who runs a business and is sort of we actually have a client like this, it's small business, sort of 6 or 7 staff, and they're very much about wanting to go on a digital transformation journey, but they're very not scared. They're they think that they think that the staff are going to push back on everything they're trying to get them to do. How do you tackle those kind of problems?
Yeah, look, I mean, part of my role is really to kind of address some of those concerns up front. So part of it is, you know, when I interact with C-level executives and even with boards, you have to keep in mind that a lot of these cases, senior people in the business have started their careers in an analog era. And so, you know, digital is still somewhat new to them, although it's been around for, say, 25 years. There is a bit of a fear factor, even at the executive level, because they don't necessarily understand it. They don't understand kind of the level of urgency and disruption that's coming to the industry. They don't necessarily understand the technology and the impact it can have. And so they are somewhat reserved in their own approach. When it comes to obviously employees as well, you also have to think about, you know, some of the employees in the business are super excited because they've got the skills. There are lots of employees in the business that don't. And so they fear, there is a fear factor that is associated with that. There's a number of ways to do that. One is first talk about what's happening from an industry perspective. Talk about, you know, the level of disruption and adoption. So, you know, once an industry typically has 20% of sales operating coming through a digital channel, effectively that industry is disrupted. And if you're not investing in digital, you're likely to be left behind. And we have data that shows our customers that made early investments, and we have this from a global view across industry, to show those that made early investments year on year, and we've done this research for I think 5 years now, they're actually breaking away. So across every single metric that you might measure that industry by, they're actually the distance between those, the top 10% that made early investments versus those that made later investments or haven't made that investment, is actually getting wider and wider year on year. And so if you haven't made that investment yet, then you're creating a moat where you're effectively going to be left behind, right? And so you need to make that investment. I think one is to break it down into very simple steps. So what can you do first, right? And part of that is, well, what are your goals for your business? And then let's translate that into some simple crawl, walk, run steps for your business on how you might use that technology to drive those business goals. And really simplify it to, you know, some tactical steps. Here are some of the things you need in your organization, whether that be roles and skills or you work with an agency or partner on. Here is the technology that you need to invest in. You know, maybe you might start with a lightweight technology that's easy to deploy. And as they get more mature, more confidence around it, then you might tackle the harder technologies, the ones that take longer to deploy.
Okay. One of my other challenges that I see, you know, a lot of people throwing terms about is artificial intelligence, machine learning, yeah, and things like that. Yeah. And you must see it as well, because, you know, the difference between machine learning and artificial intelligence, there's a chasm between the two of them.
Yeah.
How do you see that affecting that sort of next generation of business in the next 10 years?
Yeah. Oh, look, I mean, certainly from Adobe's perspective, we see it as adding value. So there's a couple of areas. Let me talk about it first. So machine learning, deep learning, these are all a subset of effectively artificial intelligence. We have been in this space for a very long time. We've had machine learning capability, you know, whether it be deciding what content that you have to put in front of what customer at what time, you know, whether that be, you know, people that looked at this product also looked at these products. That's using, you know, an algorithm to be able to work out of the million of products that you might, SKUs that you might have sitting in your database, which is the right, say, 3 or 4 to put in front of that customer as upsell, cross-sell products. Or it might be, how do I best optimize my marketing spend? So I have, you know, $50,000, I want to spend that to drive this goal. Maybe it's revenue, maybe it's number of credit card applications, whatever it might be. How can I most effectively spend that money across all of the different channels that I have available to me to be able to achieve that goal? And we can use, again, algorithms to be able to work that out. So we have that capability built into our technology. We're making more and more of that available to be able to, what we call, augment the business marketer creative role within businesses rather than automate, meaning displace. And right. We've done research recently around future work, and the marketing creative functions are one of those that are least likely to be disrupted by AI and various other disruptive technologies. You're going to see more augmentation happening, meaning it creates additional capacity for you to do more of your work, hopefully removing a lot of the redundant or repetitive kind of tasks that you do, and allow you to be able to do more of what you're really good at.
Do you think privacy issues? We talked about AI data. Do you think privacy issues are going to become more of a factor for, you know, businesses? What should they be doing in terms of, you know, setting themselves up now so that they're, you know, that they're well protected sort of down the line?
Yeah. I mean, we just saw GDPR 2 come out of Europe. So that's the next iteration of kind of the global data protection, or it's not global or something else for G, but global, that data protection is the next iteration of that. And that's becoming more stringent. For us, at least within our technology, we build GDPR into the technology so we can help guide customers around managing data. From a Domi perspective, we talk about know me and respect me. So know me means know what I'm looking for, help guide me to, you know, that path to purchase or application or service or whatever it might be. And, you know, all of the data even shows that, you know, post things like Cambridge Analytica, et cetera, that customers are still willing to share more information to get better personalized experiences. So we're still not doing a good enough job from a personalization perspective, and customers are willing to share even more information than they do today to be able to get those personalized experiences. But at the same time, be respectful of the data that I'm giving you. Don't onsell that to third-party partners, et cetera. Use it to be able to improve my experience, not drive more revenue for your business. So as in, you know, when I say, you know, additional revenue streams by selling that on or whatever it might be. And even if you're a small, medium-sized business, think about the privacy and governance that you operate in your business. Who has access to that data? How's it stored? And putting a steering committee around your data and privacy together to make sure that you're managing that in a judicious way.
Well, I guess we're sort of leading up to my last questions here, but you obviously, as I said earlier on, you travel around a fair bit and you're dealing with a lot of forward-thinking companies. Out of all the people that you've worked with, or even perhaps the people that you haven't worked with, who do you see doing this the best? Who's a benchmark out there that people should be looking at to learn from?
In respect of privacy, customer experience?
No, absolutely everything. That digital transformation, the whole piece.
It's funny, I ask this question of our customers all the time. Their aspiration is. I think not to play this off, but I mean, I think Adobe does this pretty well. I mean, we kind of drink our own champagne and use our own technology in the way that we operate. And, you know, we've gone through our own transformation. We used to sell CDs in a box, less than 9 years ago. Yeah. And we transitioned our own business to software as a service. We're the first software company to do it successfully. There have been lots of other companies that have tried that prior but hadn't been successful at it. And, you know, we just, our executive team obviously made a big bet there by transforming the business. And we had to, you know, teach Wall Street around new metrics to measure businesses that were software as a service, what we call ARR, which is annual recurring revenue. And, you know, that was a big change for our own business. And we used our own technology now even to obviously personalize experience for our own customers. We use it internally to even drive our own employee experience. So what I might see on our intranet is personalized for my role and my function within this business, right, versus some of my colleagues would see something entirely different. And so we're using that to be able to engage, retain, understand churn of our employees, et cetera. And so we're trying to be at the forefront of that. And that also applies to things like data and privacy, et cetera, is to be able to make sure that we're as close to a leader in this area as we can be so that we can help then educate our customers at the same time. You know, if I think about, for different things. So, if I think about, I love what, say, ANZ Bank is doing and how they changing their entire business to be customer centric. And so they've kind of gone with this agile approach. And when I'm talking about agile, they've kind of broken their functional silos of marketing, technology, you know, legal, creative, et cetera. And they've built, taken people from each of those areas and put them into a team focused on a particular customer segment and become very customer centric focused. And I don't think it's come without pain, but I think, kind of breaking down those functional silos and testing out new models of how you operate the business is really interesting. And I think that's kind of the forward thinking disruptive that you need to be in this current climate. So I think that they're doing a great job. We've done some work with Telstra recently and they just think about how they use content and how they might use that content across different ways that they engage with not just their customers, but they use it. They've got screens in every level in their buildings in Australia and the Philippines and India.
Yeah.
How you use that content to talk to your own employees and make them aware that campaigns are coming into market, et cetera. And so they're trying to be quite disruptive. You know, it's easy for us to look at businesses that are digitally born, whether they be the Ubers and the Airbnbs, et cetera. But I don't think that's as challenging. You don't have to change kind of a 100 or 300-year-old legacy. You know, we have Royal Bank of Scotland. It's a 300-year-old bank, and, you know, it has the Queen as its customer. And they actually managed to get their board on board, excuse the pun, in respect of their own transformation. And their board actually logs into Adobe Tools to understand on a quarterly basis, to understand how our technology works, how it drives personalization for their customers. And that's kind of then, you know, adopted widely and communicated widely across that business. And, you know, they've managed to transform that by having kind of their leaders walk the walk, not just talk the talk.
All this technology that you are faced with every day, you know, we spoke about AI, machine learning, we talked about blockchain, there's robotics, there's Internet of Things, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
If someone gave you $10,000 and asked you to bet on one of these as probably the cornerstone of digital transformation in the next 10 years, what would you bet on?
I'm going to take a really risky bet, and that's probably just part of my nature, but my money is actually on quantum computing. I think AI is great. So I'll give you an example. I'll use this when I present. Say, okay, let's assume that you and I are using Google Maps and we're both going to the same location, but you're driving a car and I'm riding a bicycle. And you've got AI to kind of work out which is the best route, and maybe using Google Maps, I'm using Apple Maps, right? Similar technologies, I'd say Google's probably better from an algorithm perspective. Let's assume that there is a 10% better efficiency from a time perspective for your route versus mine. The difference is if I had quantum computing, I'm driving a Formula One, right? Like, it doesn't matter that I'm riding a bicycle, I'm still going to get there way quicker than you are, right? And I think if we do get to quantum computing and we're seeing more and more improvements in results, and even it has been taken commercial, like if you look at some of the cloud computing, whether it be Azure, whether it be Google, whether it be IBM, they started making some of that quantum computing capability available as a service. I think that's going to be a game changer for all of us, because that's, you know, that's putting AI on steroids. So AI is really interesting, but I think AI with quantum computing is going to be an entire landscape change for all of us. And I think we're getting there. I think 10 years, maybe I might be a little ambitious, but, you know, if I had to put my money, I'm going to put it there and you know, hope for that to happen in the next 10 years.
It's going to kill us all, Scott. That's all I have to say about artificial intelligence and quantum computers.
Security that we use.
I read up on quantum computers about 6 months ago, and I probably had a good couple of hours where I just tried to get my head around the basics, and I still have absolutely no understanding how a quantum computer worked. But what I did get out of it was that there were suggestions that a suitably single quantum computer could be more powerful than every computer bundled together on the planet currently in existence, which is kind of scary.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing too is that China is the one that's making all of the investment. Roughly about 63% of quantum computing investments in China. So, you know, and it'd be interesting to see if they do become obviously the leaders in quantum computing, what that means for the rest of the world.
My last question to you for today is, where do you get your information from? If somebody wants to learn about digital, you know, what do you read? What websites do you go to? What emails do you subscribe to?
And that's a really good question. I honestly, part of my job is, and it's not easy, and I'll be frank about that, because, you know, I get tested by executives across the spectrum of transformation and across, you know, what's happening in my industry or what's happening, you know, with my competitors or what's happening in my region, what's happening in different areas. So, I talk about the future work and what that means for organizational change, skill set change, what that can mean for, you know, AI ethics, what does it mean for how we use technology to drive better employees. There's a wide breadth of topics that I'm somewhat expected to be knowledgeable on. Frankly speaking, I use multiple news sources, and I probably spend almost an hour a day just trying to keep track of what's happening globally. And, mostly I use a summarization tools like Flipboard, where I've, you know, kind of chosen a bunch of topics that I'm interested in, and that kind of collates the news articles that I then consume to be able to stay up to date. We also have access to technology called Goldmine, which is where you get all of the Forrester, Gartner, e-consultancy reports, and I try and stay on top of that. Usually I actually use long flights to be able to read through those. So I kind of throw them all into an email folder, and then when I don't have any internet connectivity on a long flight, I then try and consume them to stay up to date. But yeah, a lot of the news aggregation apps, I think, is probably the answer to that. And then I just choose a lot of topics that I think are relevant to my role to be able to stay up to date.
Any one person or something that you would?
Certainly, I must say, I'm a big fan of Scott Galloway's. I was listening to his podcast this morning with Kara Swisher, and I just like the way he thinks. I'm probably a bit of the. He's also a bit of an agitator too, so certainly he's one that I tend to keep track of. Who else is in there? There's lots of, Tom Goodwin, etc. I think there are, thinking on the horizon, quite macro in respect of where things are coming and what's happening. There's a host of people that I tend to follow.
Yeah, Tom Goodwin's I'm a big fan of Tom Goodwin's. I've been trying to get him on the show for about 6 months, and we keep missing each other in, dates and times backwards and forwards. And I also then saw him have an argument with Gary Vaynerchuk on Twitter the other day, which was absolutely hilarious. Two people at completely the different ends of the spectrum in terms of how they think about business, just going at each other. It was very amusing. Anyway,
always quite humorous, so I think that also keeps us interested.
The thing with Tom Goodwin is he kind of sees things that are really in plain sight, and with some of the points he makes about digital transformation, about people emailing you for opinions, businesses emailing you for an opinions that you can't just simply click the reply button to. It's little things like that. You go, actually, that doesn't make a lot of sense. They're allowed to email you and ask you for an opinion, but you can't actually reply and give you your opinion. You have to go through this convoluted fill in this form, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, that's another conversation entirely. But okay, look, my last question for you then is, if somebody wants to get hold of you, if they're interested in, you or Adobe coming into their business with digital transformation, what's the best way of getting hold of you?
Well, LinkedIn's probably the best way that I connect with a social audience. I am on Twitter and most social channels, but probably the one that I use the most, and that's also just for messaging, etc., is LinkedIn. So it's Rigby Scott at LinkedIn. So I'm pretty easy to find on there. I'm pretty active on there in respect of commentary and posting and writing blogs, etc. That's probably the area to grab me.
Brilliant, mate. Thank you very much for your insights about digital transformation. It was absolutely fantastic to have you on the show. Adobe was one of my, I can probably say it now, it's been one of my bugbear companies over the years, because I came from the, back in 10 years ago when we were using CDs to upload. And when you're running a small agency, all of a sudden you have to buy another license. It absolutely, it used to cripple you. So you'd find keys and you'd steal the software.
You want those.
Okay. Oh, look, mate, 10 years ago, everybody.
I know.
You know what I mean? And then you did, and then Adobe, the cloud computing came out, and all of a sudden it was, $60 a month. And it just became so much more of a viable product for many more businesses.
We can release updates now, daily, if not monthly, So as we have a new tool or feature, we can just deploy that straight away without having to wait every 2 or 3 years to do it.
It's amazing the times now I've seen where that Adobe software has actually being used internally in businesses, where 10 years ago it just wouldn't, because it was just way too expensive to buy the software, and people wouldn't, didn't want to spend that capital in, investment. So they're still using Quark Express and shit like that. So
that is going back. I actually did industrial design as my first degree. I was using PageMaker and Quark
My dad was in design and layouts, and he learned on Quark. That was one of the first things I was exposed to, was Quark Express. And I was like, oh God. Anyway, look, thank you very much for being on the show, mate.
Well, thanks, Simon.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Simon.
That's it from me today. Thank you very much for joining in. Thank you, Scott, for being on the show. It is much appreciated getting people of the caliber of Scott Rigby from the caliber of organization of Adobe. So we hope you enjoyed that, and we look forward to seeing you next week.